I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt. Hello, Tom.
I saw Star Wars, Scott.
So did I, man. I was going to say, we should probably talk about that movie a little bit today, I'm guessing, right?
It's in the news. That's all I've got to say this week.
I think you're not alone. I think a lot of people saw Star Wars, turns out. And we have,
about 29 million worth of people saw Star Wars.
It's a lot of people. So I think their worries or their concerns that Star Wars, the second year in a row, may not perform very well may have been misplaced. Seems like plenty of people like the Star Wars. We'll get into more of that in a second. But before we do, we have fantastic guests with us. Let's start with our first. I think this is our first married couple on the show together as guests.
Woo-hoo!
Yep.
And we're doing this from different rooms.
Exactly. Two different Skype accounts. This is
just
amazing.
The way we live our lives.
Exactly. There was a prenup where you said, look, Skype accounts or individual accounts. And all right, we'll get married. I want to welcome to the show Audrey Kearns. She is a podcaster, writer, and actress. Welcome to the show, Audrey.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
I almost called you Padre. Because
that's okay. Call me anything you like. You know what? I saw Star Wars too.
Oh, good. Then we'll have even more to talk about. Yeah. Joining us also is her husband. His name is Brian Bradley. He's an executive producer and writer and a very busy guy this time of year. I'm so glad you're here as well, Brian.
It's my pleasure. It's a lot more fun than servicing notes for NBC.
Well, I hope to learn more about that later.
My wife knows that pain. She is also a Comcast employee.
Yeah.
Well, they're a wonderful organization.
Of course they are.
They pay my health insurance. Yeah.
And I don't, exactly.
I think they're listening, but who knows? They're always listening.
Of course they're listening.
Yeah. Brian, did you see Star Wars?
Yeah, we saw it last night.
Oh, awesome.
Did you see it in separate rooms?
by our contract, we have to.
Okay.
If I even see her, I have to leave the theater. No, it was amazing. It was incredible.
Yeah, I have yet to hear from anyone I've talked to who didn't enjoy themselves. Sounds like you guys had a good time.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I met a couple of grumpy people online. Today there's always somebody that has to lob in there. You know, everyone's cheering, and then someone's got to lob in there. Well, it was all right, and you're like, okay.
Well, someone that you on Brian's Facebook tried to compare it to The Arrival and said it's no Arrival.
It isn't.
Yes,
it's
what?
Anything you're right. Like The Arrival.
Yeah, you're it's right. Literally
it's
not
no Citizen Kane either.
Yes.
that was the review of The Sun Also Rises. By the way, it's no Beowulf. Oh,
yeah. It's Godfather is no Indiana Jones. I can tell you that.
No, it certainly isn't.
I think that's just the internet, and who cares? Like, the way I look at it is, we are getting a regular dose of Star Wars goodness now. That I don't know how you can not be happy or excited about that. Even if, you know, nobody's expecting the greatest performances in film ever, or you know, the kinds of movies that 300 years from now, you know, depict mankind in some special way. It's Star Wars, and for what it's supposed to be, it's awesome. And I was 8 years old last night, and it was amazing. So
yeah,
I'm with you guys.
Agreed.
Tom, how'd you feel? Tom, you liked it? It was good.
You know what? We should just go ahead and get right into the top of the show. Get
right.
into the news
Here
because
it is.
that's what our first story is.
Right.
And then I will answer your question.
Here you go.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
All right, lay it on me.
So if you didn't hear, Star Wars Rogue One premiered this week. You may have heard people talking about it earlier in the show. Lots of people have seen it. Yeah, 29.2 million Thursday evening. So not just a little over half of Force Awakens Thursday gross. Mm. So it's not as good, obviously.
Oh, no.
Not making the money. We are going to stay spoiler free. I know some of you have probably already turned off the podcast in a panic. We're not going to talk about what happened in the movie, but yeah, we were starting to do it anyway, Scott, which is, you know, what are our impressions? And I personally had a smile on my face through the entire things. Couple of minor nitpicks that actually just made me smile. Like, oh, that's kind of funny that, you know, I don't know that they would really do that. But then, of course, I don't know that they would really have a galaxy far, far away with aliens and all of that. So nothing ruined my enjoyment of it. Mm-hmm. Eileen, my wife, and I were trying to decide whether we liked Force Awakens better or Rogue One. She kind of thinks she likes Force Awakens better because she liked Rey and she liked all of that. I think it's like saying, you know, do you like peanut butter or popcorn better? It's they're just kind of different things.
Yeah,
I think they're very different too. And I think it kind of introduced us to what we may be finding with the Star Wars stories. And like you guys said, this is spoiler free, but they, you know, Disney did some things that I don't think they would have done with the what they're doing with this newer trilogy and everything. And I liked it. Mm-hmm. I really liked it. And then my husband, who's in the other room, Brian, he's a cinematic fan, Star Wars, where I enjoy Star Wars Rebels. I read some of the books and stuff like that. And I really, in either one can enjoy it. I really enjoy some of the Easter eggs in there that only like a Rebels fan may see. It's not going to ruin the movie or ruin the plot in any way. It's just something where you can nod to yourself and say, hey, that was pretty cool.
Well, how do we stand, and Brian, I'll ask you this, how do we stand on fan service? Like the idea that this movie mm-hmm. maybe contained more total moments of fan service than Force Awakens arguably did, or even previous iterations of both prequels and Star Wars itself. It seemed like it was kind of nonstop.
I think that would be very, very fair. Mm. I would be, that's a fair thing. You know, I love The Force Awakens and thought it was an excellent way. I mean, it served its purpose in many ways. Mm. And all movies are, they're sort of, your enjoyment is based on your perspective going in. And so, you know, with Force Awakens, we're sort of relaunching the series of films in a really amazing way. And it did everything it's supposed to, and all the criticism about it, I think, has missed the point of, you know, what Force Awakens was trying to do. Mm-hmm. But this is free now of some of the burdens that Force Awakens had. And it was much more of a pure Star Wars film in a lot of ways. Mm. It much more than Force Awakens. If you liked Star Wars when you were, you know, 8 or 9 years old, A New Hope or whatever, you know, this is, I would say you'd be hard pressed not to be grinning like a fool throughout this entire thing. It is absolutely joyful in all those ways.
One of the ways that I enjoyed it, and it goes right to what you're saying, was a feeling when I was 8 and seeing Star Wars for the first time that I was seeing a bunch of weird things I'd never seen before. I was seeing, I didn't really understand, you know, when you're 8, you don't really think about plot and plot devices and tropes and things. And maybe perhaps those all existed in some form before. But the things I was being shown, the sounds I was hearing and the visuals I was seeing, this was all brand new territory as far as I was concerned at that age. And I think mm-hmm. that's probably true of most people. So what Force Awakens gave me was a return to what I remember.
Yep.
What this gave me was a new sense of weirdo stuff. And I love the weird stuff. I love seeing, well, what's no spoilers. And the funny thing about this movie, the irony is that this, if you've seen episode 4, you've seen the big spoiler. But all the, you know, the minutiae in between is important. So I'm not going to do any of that. But there's things like, well, where do you keep information that somebody needs to steal? How do you access that information? Like Tom said, sometimes you can get wrapped up in, well, geez, that'd be a lot easier today. I just use my smartphone and a password. But in this world, I like that there's these big things you have to jump around and do and consider. And to me, it creates a sense of reality that isn't mine, but feels like a well thought out one someplace else. And I love that.
You know, this is not a spoiler. You know, it has the joy of it is that it's a very, it's not. Star Wars is not really science fiction. Everyone knows this, I hope. It's sort of fantasy, you know. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at Star Wars going, boy, there's an awful lot of giant switches that built into their technology, that doesn't seem smart.
I think the gravitational effects of the Death Star would not.
I love that everything they build is like, this is really cool, but could it benefit from a giant, huge switch? That looks like something from a cartoon. Yes. Or do all the sets, like any architecture in Star Wars, looks a little like a set from The Voice. Yeah. I mean, they're just sort of people walking down long stages to stand there and just talk in the middle. There's no furniture around. They're just kind of standing on a shiny stage.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just what it should be. It's exactly true to itself.
And you're seeing aliens that you don't see anywhere else. You're seeing faces and like technologies that while sometimes are kind of retro, and this movie went out of its way to make sure it sort of fit in that 1976 sort of era, but it still just felt lived in and dirty and grimy and all the things I want, all of it.
It did. And I think one thing that they did that the other movies can't do, and when I'll go back to say maybe because it's a Star Wars story, it's part of the anthology series and everything, is that it started high and it stayed there. The level of anticipation, it was an action movie as well as a science fiction movie. It started with a high amount of energy and it stayed that way the entire film. There was no time to stop and, hey, let's build these characters and let's build this world a little bit, because, you know, we all know it. And it was, and a thing I loved about it, and this is, you know, why I love science fiction and fantasy and everything, you know, with a prequel trilogy or the original trilogy, you have very big people and powerful people and people that can use the force. But this movie is about everyday people that fight the good fight when they're trying to be dominated by evil, the people that you're not going to remember, that you don't hear about. These are the little things that are going on that nobody ever hears about in the history books. And it was a fascinating story to hear their story told.
Yeah. It's not, there's nobody who's the chosen one in this one.
Exactly.
And again, we're skirting around details, but there are moments in it where you're like, oh, iconic thing.
Yeah.
But never once were we forced to just follow that. It was all about regular people doing regular things, rising to the occasion, doing the right thing in impossible odds. Like, that is so much fun, and it made me feel like a kid.
Go ahead, Audrey.
I was saying, I like you, Scott, I'm like one. I was in the movie theater in 77 as well, so I was able to revisit that 7-year-old me and everything. So that was totally cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was 7 years old again yesterday myself. And I think if there's one thing that people might not like this for, is that it is a story that they then put Star Wars characters in. That's what I like about it. It doesn't feel like they're trying to come up with a reason to have this or that character there. They came up with a solid adventure story and then fit into the Star Wars universe and said, oh, well, if Darth Vader, you know, fits this character, let's have him be that character, that element of the story. I think some people are looking at that and maybe seeing, yeah, but I don't think the rebellion would act that way. Or I don't think, you know, this would be the way that this doesn't consistent with their ideals or that. And I can sort of see that, but it did not bother me in the least.
It's easy.
I was just enjoying every piece of
it. Sure. I mean, it's easy to get cynical and say, well, there's just a lot of, you could call all that stuff stunt casting, I guess. But I think that in the context of Star Wars, that just felt right to me. And not only right to me, there are going to be people who really like the prequels who are going to get a little bit of fan service. And there are people who really like the 3D animated cartoons that came, the both Clone Wars and current Star Wars Rebels show, that are going to get a couple of things. And if you like the original trilogy, you're going to get a ton of those things. And if you liked a little bit of crossover with all of that stuff, you're going to get little pieces of all of it in ways that felt respectful to the body of the work. And it's just, oh my gosh, it's awesome. And
it wasn't like nudge, wink, wink, this is for you. You know, I agree with you. They did a great job of incorporating everything into the story and doing fan service. And if you're not part of that particular Star Wars fandom, whether it's video games, the literature, or the animated television series, it's okay if you miss it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not gonna hurt the story in any way.
Yeah.
I think it's worth adding here that this is directed beautifully. It's not a spoiler at all. It's just, it is beautifully put together. It's beautifully shot. It's beautifully realized. And it's beautifully paced in terms as a story. It's a movie that seems exactly as long as it should be, which is refreshing. Mm-hmm. And it isn't sort of fattened up. It's got everything you need. You're not sort of looking at your watch or going, we could probably nibble that out of there. And that comes from a guy who writes for a living. You know, I'm a picky dude. So it's like, you know, I notice that kind of stuff a lot. And I think the audience normally does too. But I just think that's amazing. It's well directed. And I believe that this dude, Gareth Edwards.
Yeah.
I think he snuck some Dune references in there, man. there are several spots in there for those that are Dune fans where this guy's like, there are little nods to science fiction throughout, beyond even the canon of Star Wars.
And Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bunch of that.
I could say what they were because they're they're pretty spot on.
They really were. But not only that, again, that's where some of my weird comes in. Like I get to see sights I'm not used to seeing, but it felt consistent with the world. And so it wasn't like out of place, but I'd see these moments or these places or just some of the planet surfaces, just the farm that Mads Mikkelsen's running a family on.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to go there. Like, right now, can I go there? I want to be in this place. And that's what Star Wars used to do for me. It did it again with Episode 7, but in a lot of ways, it was like, oh, yeah, well, that planet's a lot like Tatooine, and I love Tatooine, so that's cool. And like a lot of these like things. And this shows us a bunch of new stuff, but it never felt like they were trying to take me out of the world I love. Ugh, well, we could talk all day.
I should shut up. But it reminds me, and as I think it's reminded others, of the first time that we saw Hoth in Empire Strikes Back. Mm. And, you know, we hadn't really seen a lot of planets. There's a lot of space, there's Tatooine, but there's a lot of kind of spaceships and stuff in the first film. Mm-hmm. And Empire came and it said, oh, this world's huge. We went to Dagobah. We were on Hoth. This gives you that same kind of galaxy jumping thing, except it's all beautiful, practical, real locations that they discovered. I'm sure they're bolstered by CGI, but you couldn't tell in the main.
Yeah.
And it just, like you were like, this feels real. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so good.
Loved it. Loved it.
Yep. All right.
All right, we now have to give equal time to Star Trek after all of that.
No problem.
Sonequa, I'm all over that.
Sonequa Martin-Green, who you might know as Courtney Wells on The Good Wife, or Tamar on Once Upon a Time, or probably more likely Sasha on The Walking Dead, is now going to be the lead in Star Trek Discovery. The show will focus on her as the lieutenant commander of a ship. Recall that we're not focusing on the captain. The captain will be played by Michelle Yeoh, but the story will focus on the lieutenant commander, who will be played by Sonequa Martin-Green. And Star Trek Discovery, if you don't remember, is coming to CBS in May, and all of the episodes will be on CBS All Access. Only the first episode will be broadcast.
So I got a thing to say about this for all the Walking Dead fans out there. When you hear something like this, does this make you nervous? Because to me, it says, oh, she's got another job now.
Exactly.
It was like finding out when there was a certain, if people haven't watched it yet, I think it's been plenty of time, but there's a Breaking Bad character this happens to. And I remember at the time going, oh, no, you can't be doing this other job because this is bad. And that turned out to be bad. So
but I think it's okay. I think it's okay. Mm. Although, you know, in the hierarchy of likely people to kill off on Walking Dead, even this aside, she was already right up there in number like 1 through 5.
I'm kind of surprised she's still there.
Yeah. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So I don't think it would shock anybody, but I also think because this is CBS All Access and because the production schedule is very different, I think they're more open now to people being on different shows. You know, they had Lawrence Fishburne was on Blackish as the grandpa and was an EP on that show, but he was a huge major regular character on Hannibal on a different network. So I think they're starting to able to do that stuff now.
Yeah, especially with the shows that don't have, you know, we've gone away from 24 episode seasons on the major networks. You know, Walking Dead does 10 at a time.
Yeah.
And,
8,
you
10.
Know, it's easier to juggle schedules now. So I bet you that is what's burning through everybody's head. Okay, everyone's gonna be watching. Is she gonna die? Is she gonna die?
They've actually come out and said she will have enough time to shoot both. And Sasha isn't even in every episode of The Walking Dead, so it could be possible.
Sure. So someone in the chat suggested that it's the reason that this is true, or the reason that we're seeing more people being able to have multiple roles in television and show up for quick guest spots, but also run a show somewhere and also be on some other guest spot or whatever, is because the process for TV in light of this amazing time we're in with TV right now has become faster, quicker, more efficient. You guys are sort of in the business. Is that true? Well,
Brian can answer that question.
Yeah.
Eye on that.
I'm not sure it has to do with the speed of it. I think it's, Audrey hit on a point there. I think it's about numbers of episodes. And another thing that used to happen was all production issues aside, there was an exclusivity factor. Mm. So if you hire an actor on a network show as a lead, you know, the network would require in a boilerplate way that you couldn't appear in any other television show as a series regular. You know, you would negotiate as an actor, like maybe you could do 3 guest stars or series arcs, and there would be all these kinds of things. But in this big open world, where the networks are just a part of the puzzle, you know, they're not able to really make those demands anymore on actors, and actors don't go into things anymore expecting to be held back. In fact, it's quite the opposite. They come back and say, I'll do this, but I'm also doing this movie, and I'm going to do this thing on Netflix. And you know, you have to make those kinds of deals now.
Is it like the old Hollywood studio system, sort of seeing that go away, same things happening to TV?
Yeah, to some degree. It's it's, you know, there was an exclusivity that, you know, if you wanted to work in television, you know, back in the day, you know, you only had the four, well, 3 and then 4 network. Yeah. Cable kind of opened it up, but cable didn't make a huge impact on the network TV initially. It's really now premium cable, streaming, you know, and stuff like that. Plus, as actors, it's changed a lot when they decided they wanted to start bringing in like big movie names, you know, to come and be on television. It started changing. People were like, oh, TV's really cool to do now, so I'm going to go do that. Yeah. These movie actors were coming down, if you were putting heavy quotes, down to do television. And one of their things is like, well, I'm not going to be stuck in that kind of a contract. And so once they started breaking that, it sort of breaks it for everybody else, you know. So there's a little bit of like, they followed suit, and it's sort of going the, you know, if you're somebody who's never had a series, you know, you're probably going to be under kind of one of the old contracts. But if you're someone that they really want for something, especially like the Star Trek thing, and you know, they had a hard time casting it, you know, or so we've been led to believe,
sure.
You know, I think you get down to, it's like whatever deal we need to make to get her to come play the role.
She seems awesome. I'm stoked about
it. She is. I mean, she's terrific. We've seen her chop. She's got a great resume, and there are other casting announcements this week as well. You know, so we already know that we have a female captain of Asian descent, but we also have our first openly gay character who's going to be an office Starfleet officer with Anthony Rapp, the actor Anthony Rapp, and then they hired all the Klingons.
Mm.
We've got 3 Klingons: Mary Chifo, Shahzad Latif, and Chris Obi. And Mary Chifo, got her mom. You guys, Donnie Darko fans, the one that says, "I'm beginning to doubt your something with Sparkle Motion."
Oh yeah.
Commitment.
Yeah,
your commitment to Sparkle Motion. It's her daughter who's playing a Klingon, and I'm excited because I'm 6 feet tall, so I've always been awkward, and this girl's 6 feet tall, and of course she's going to be a Klingon.
Yeah,
you know, and so it's a very multicultural cast, gender-wise as well, which I think they're doing a better job, in my opinion, than the Star Wars world as far as gender stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, and this is Roddenberry's dream to have Sonequa Martin-Green as a main character and Michelle Yeoh as a captain. It's like infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
Yeah. We can't have Janeway be the only Starfleet captain female for the rest of the time. We need to pass the torch.
Yeah.
Good time to do it.
Absolutely.
I'm very excited. I'm very excited. This is the most excited I've been since I heard Brian Fuller left, which really made me sad.
That made me worried. Know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good. Good news all around.
Another thing that made me worried was Yahoo announcing Wednesday that data provided by law enforcement in November indicates a security breach compromised more than 1 billion accounts back in August 2013. Information may have included names, email addresses, telephone numbers, dates of birth, hashed passwords, which means they were encrypted, but they were encrypted with something called MD5, which has been easily crackable since 2005. And in some cases, there were unencrypted security questions and answers as well. This is separate from the breach that you may be remembering that they announced in September. So
there are, in addition to that.
Yes, there are 2 separate Yahoo breaches. Yahoo said they're notifying affected users and invalidating security questions. And on top of all of that, Yahoo is still in the process of being acquired by Verizon.
So they haven't.
Still using Yahoo. That deal's going to go like going to fall flat then?
Well, the deal is legally needs to go unless it's not approved by regulators. So Verizon today said that they are talking to Yahoo about changing the terms, and they could try to back out of the deal, but it would have to go to court possibly if Yahoo didn't agree to let them back out. It's a big mess.
If I were Verizon or anyone who uses Yahoo services, the big concern to me now is this is a technology company, a big one with a big name that's been around for a very long time that since prior to it, everyone getting the knowledge or the IT community understanding how hackable MD5 is, has continued to employ it as an encryption method for various services. And that's terrible. Like, that makes them less valuable. So what I hope is happening is if Verizon's still going to buy them, Tom, maybe they're going back to renegotiate the bottom line because it seems like
you're buying some crappy tech.
Yeah, that's just awful, man.
Yeah.
If it's like a billion accounts, I mean, I haven't used Yahoo as my email account in like probably a decade, but it's probably my account. I'm probably one of those billion people.
I mean, just statistically, right?
Statistically.
They targeted you specifically.
You were the reason that they're like, if we get a billion accounts, we might get Audrey.
Yeah.
Yes.
Have they seen, and Tom, I'm asking you this point blank, but have they seen like any of this stuff pop up and be used in some nefarious way?
No, and that's a really good question. They don't have any evidence that it's been exploited in the wild. There was evidence that it was being sold, that someone was trying to sell this data, and it is valid data. It's not, sometimes people go out there and sell data, and then it turns out, well, it really wasn't from Yahoo. This actually was from Yahoo. It actually was trying to be sold. Yahoo is not sure whether any of this stuff actually got accessed or not. They only know parts of it. But they're being extra careful at this point and just warning people about it. So, I mean, if you're a Yahoo user, even from 10 years ago, you should go and change that password. And especially if you used that same password somewhere else, a lot of times what hackers will do if they get these databases is they'll go try the same combinations at other sites to try to get the people who use the same password and username everywhere.
Yeah. So the only other thing I would just say is an anecdotal little note. I noticed yesterday that Flickr, which is owned by Yahoo, which I still sort of use, not really, but kind of, popped up with a popover message over everything that said, add a recovery email to your account. If you forget your password or can't access your account, we will use this information to help you get back in.
Oh,
wow. I'm not doing that. I'm not giving them more information.
I know.
That seems really dangerous. Normally, I would see this as like, oh, thanks, Google or whoever. I appreciate the second factor authentication email. I really appreciate you having a backup. But I don't, in this case, this makes me nervous. I'm not putting it in.
Yeah. How many companies does Yahoo own? Is it a lot like Flickr and everything? Or are there a lot of?
Most of them have gone under. So not as many as they used to.
It's a surprise that they've gone under. This company is such a juggernaut.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I mean, I think you're going to discover. I think it's more likely that we're going to discover that Yahoo is completely being run out of the back of like a TV repair shop in Chinatown in New York. It's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's just some old lady who has to press a button every 10 minutes to keep it going. And it's, you know, I mean, I don't think.
I called it Yahoo. You guys didn't get it?
I haven't heard of Yahoo in a while.
Actually, the other one that they do own that people do use and think of is Tumblr.
Tumblr's big.
Oh, I use Tumblr. Yeah.
And the nice thing about Tumblr, that's a relatively recent acquisition, but the nice thing about Tumblr is they didn't force you to move your Yahoo credentials over. You could just keep using whatever you use for Tumblr. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with the breach or not. That would be even worse if all your Tumblr stuff got breached. But my guess is Tumblr, which was what, Tom, like 2013 was the acquisition?
Yeah,
I'm guessing
around there.
I'm guessing those guys aren't using MD5 and haven't since 2005.
No, the Tumblr database is separate, I believe, unless, of course, like you said, you linked it to your Yahoo account, in which case then you would be vulnerable there because it would replicate over. And you should add, all joking aside, Scott, you should add that second email. Your email address is not a secret.
No.
People can find your email
address.
That's true. So if Yahoo is trying to do there is saying, hey,
you're going to want another way to recover your account if somebody cracks into it.
Yeah.
So give us a secure way. And your phone number is probably an even better thing to do than even a second email address.
Yeah, it's just it's just weird timing is all. That's all. You know, it just feels dirty.
Well, it just makes you feel suspicious. Like, why do you ask?
Yeah, it just feels a little dirty. Why are you asking now? Is something happening over there at yahoo.com?
Well, at least you're not getting dragged into jail for playing pinball.
Uh-oh, what's the story?
Oh, my goodness. Mm.
Wow. Kokomo, Indiana Mayor Greg Goodnight, which, I mean, that's a whole story right there.
Yeah.
signed into law.
Just to be clear, he's Kokomo sounds made up. I know it's not, but that's too many K's.
I know.
And then his name is Greg Goodnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Greg Goodnight of Kokomo, Indiana.
As reported by the Kokomo Tribune.
Yeah.
So I'm going to assume they got it right.
Yeah.
Signed into law an ordinance Tuesday ending a 61-year ban on pinball machines in the town. Kokomo Police Chief Rob Baker then played the first legal game of pinball in the town since 1955.
So, okay. So the irony here, or not even irony, but the truth is they've been playing pinball in Indiana for a very, very, very long time. There are pinball, traveling halls of fame type things that show up in Indiana. Indiana is no stranger to pinball, but this dumb
rule. Scoff laws, all of them.
All scoff laws. But this, I guess it's good to finally get it off the books and knock that crap off, because how dumb is that?
You know what that sounds like, though? It sounds like an answer in a Boulder Dash game.
Yeah.
You know, if you ever play Boulder Dash and they have that weird laws mm-hmm. where it's like in Kokomo, Indiana, and then you write in your own answer.
Yeah.
Pinball is illegal.
Yeah.
I
just can't imagine. I'm trying to think of the circumstances. And I know pinball was a long time ago, like in River City in the Music Man. it was saucy. You know, it was kind of like it was an addiction and people were worried about the effects on the vow and the ethics and morals of youths who were playing pinball. Mm-hmm. But I still kind of imagining a situation where they're like, we've got to make this illegal. I guess it's like meth back then or mm-hmm. something. It's like,
it's Pokemon Go, mm-hmm. right? Of 1955.
Yeah.
I guess it is. Well,
plus then, you know, the comics thing, which was freaking people out in 1955, you had just about everything looked like an affront to our children.
Yeah.
What are who will think of the children sort of stuff. Video games have had their time multiple times. They're having it again, but less and less because now people in power, for the most part, grew up playing video games. So you start to see this stuff fall away. But man, here's the thing I want to know. Like, the very first thing your police chief does after the law changes is play a game of pinball. When it's official that California is a weed state, will the police chief sit down to a joint?
The attorney general will immediately
put out a huge skull bomb.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing! I want that to happen.
Kamala Harris ran for Senate. She didn't want to have to do that.
Yeah,
4 foot skull bomb.
I want that to happen so bad. I can barely stand it. But
more than anything,
yeah.
I think it'd be better than the pinball. I love the daring of the police chief. Fuck it, I'm gonna play pinball.
Yeah, right.
It's illegal now. Yep. You can't
take it easy,
me.
Bill. Relax, Bill.
Slow down, buddy. Take it slowly. You don't want to burn all your pinball in one night.
And when we make egg creams legal again, we'll be on that.
Put Kokomo on the map.
That's right.
Kokomo is starting to be kind of a fun town.
Yeah
right?
Yeah.
Turns out when I looked this up on the map, it shocked me. I don't remember this, but we used to drive through Kokomo all the time when I was a kid because my parents had friends in Warsaw, Indiana.
Mm.
And
the
only highway to get to Warsaw goes right through Kokomo.
I'll tell you what's not surprising. Kokomo absolutely sounds like a place you drive through.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely does.
Oh, yeah, sure. And no
it's
offense to anyone.
It's not a place you stop, really. Unless they have a Hardee's or something.
No offense to anyone in Kokomo, but it is. Tom, did you feel any kind of temptation driving through to, like, put a quarter in a pinball machine and break
I think
the law?
My parents, you know, made us drive through pretty quick in worry that one of us would start playing pinball.
Well, then you know what that leads to.
Yeah.
Right after that.
It's
the Coleco football.
Right.
You don't want that.
It's the gateway.
No, that's what it was. Yeah. I had my Mattel electronic football in the car as we were driving, and they were worried that it might fall afoul of the law.
Yeah. You
better hurry through. Don't stop.
Imagine what Grand Theft Auto would have done to Kokomo, Indiana.
No stopping at the Wildcat Creek Golf Course, Sonny. We have to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Okay. Good for them.
Yeah, good one.
Finally, David Newberry posted on Twitter last Saturday a picture of a map of the internet from May 1973 that did not include Kokomo. It is something his dad gave him. It's got IMPs, TIPS, and PDPs that stretch from SRI to MIT to ETAC to USC, and even a tip in Hawaii points to anyone who understands any of what I just said. But it's mostly old mainframe computers in the United States and the connections between them. It's literally a map of the internet. These are all the computers that are connected to the internet in 1973.
That's amazing. And it fits on one page. My thing is like, I'm not very technically minded. Like, I did not understand what you just said, Tom. To me, when I look at this picture, it looks like it could be a map of Pern or from any fantasy novels. There's always a map in the beginning.
Yep.
That's what it looked like to me. I was trying to look at the words. I was like, I know what Xerox is.
Mm-hmm. It's more like it's like a flow chart of
Hawaii,
of Azeroth or some ancient land. Yeah, exactly. It's pretty crazy. But it also,
there be dragons.
It's the ARPA network, and it just shows you how tiny it was. Like, it was such an amazing idea, and of course changed the world, but it was so small in the beginning. I guess that's how you start,
amazing.
Though.
Amazing.
One of these should be the University of Utah right here in Salt Lake City. I'm trying to see the ship.
I see it right here at the top.
Oh yeah, there it is.
Right next, it connects directly to Illinois.
Yeah, Tom and I together, always tethered. We just didn't know it.
There's a couple of exciting things on this map. First, I don't know what's happening between Ames and Hawaii, but there's a full lightning bolt.
Yeah, man, that's like a wireless connection, satellite or something.
That's Thor is involved.
Yeah,
that.
Look at that. Wow.
And then at the top, I just love, if you know how old this is, because it says Xerox at the top of it. Xerox was on there. They were a huge part.
They were a huge deal back then, yeah.
Yep.
No, this is super
cool. What's amazing to me is that it says 1973, and it's just like, my God, this was there when I was 2 years old, and I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's so wild.
There was no email on it. You had to like type in all the logins one at a time. In fact, that link down there in the bottom left between Stanford and the USC is the first leg of the internet. Those were the first two IMPs.
Oh, really?
Connected their interface message.
I was about to ask you, what is IMP? Yeah. What is
it's
that?
Interface message processor. Mm-hmm. So
okay,
it allowed
I was
assuming
that it meant Tyrion.
Yeah. No, an imp.
Game of Thrones.
The ones that are in Utah and Illinois do mean that.
Yeah. We have little devil men on both sides that communicate with each other, and there is no internet without them. So everyone thank your local imp for his
fine
work.
And this was tweeted by Worker Gnome, who uses an imp-like gnome as his avatar.
Yes, so. Oh my goodness, you're
it
right.
All ties together.
Very nice. Well, as always, our news stories are awesome, and we love them. And part of the reason they're great is because people on our Reddit submit them. Tom, who do we thank this week for that stuff?
Oh, big thanks to One Youngsta, I Am Sci-Fi, Wayne Something, Another J. Martin, and Neth Ken, who all submitted and voted, and all the people who voted, you guys decide what we talk about.
Indeed.
We look at what you're voting on, and we pick the stuff we like.
Thank you so much.
Very
also,
cool.
This time of the show, we always like to give our guests just a little bit of time to talk about some of the cool projects they're working on before we get on to the pop quiz. Let's start with Audrey. Audrey, what is going on in your life? Where can people find more of it?
Okay, I am the editor-in-chief and the founder of geekgirlauthority.com. We're a pop culture with an emphasis on geek culture, breaking news site. We have podcasts. We have all kinds of great geek culture opinion pieces and stuff like that. It's doing really, really well. It's called Geek Girl Authority, but just think of it this way. It's a party thrown by a bunch of geek girls that everybody's invited to. our traffic is pretty much 50-50 down the middle gender-wise, and we have a lot of fun doing it, and it's doing really well. I also host an interview podcast called Kneel Before Odd, where I interview people in the nerd and entertainment world. I have another podcast called Booze and Phasers, where we drink cocktails for a little over an hour. And we mostly talk about Star Trek, but we do other fantasy and science fiction subjects as well.
Cool.
And Brian and I run a storytelling show called Five Truths and a Lie, where we get six celebrities to tell a story, and one of them is lying, and the audience gets to pick who's lying. And what you end up with is a lot of great storytelling. So that's what I have going on for me right now.
That's super awesome. I love that game, by the way. I played a form of it at some family function once,
yes.
And it was so fun watching our otherwise most honest relatives tell horrible, horrible lies.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Like, it is a lot of fun. It's great when you when people are basically having to make up a 6 to 8 minute story. Like, yeah. And so some of these people have to go and they can't just say a couple sentences. They actually have to go and rehearse a full story and present it to the audience. And it's a lot of fun.
That's great.
Well, and the fascinating thing I've noticed is the people who aren't telling the lie put just as much time into embellishing their true story to make it sound as close to a lie as possible.
And they get their feelings hurt if they're not picked as the liar. Yeah. It's very interesting. It's very interesting take on human nature, for sure.
Sure. Like a little experiment every week. Well, this is for you right here.
Kneel before Zod.
I couldn't take the Z out. Couldn't get the Z out, but that's you. All right, Brian, let's throw it over to you. What outside of the joint projects you're doing together, what else is going on for Brian Bradley?
I am, I just finished last year the Uncle Buck reimagining with Mike Epps for ABC.
Oh, cool.
That probably can be found on Hulu. And right now, I'm working on, I have two scripts that are out there. I'm kind of finishing one for NBC. Pilot script for a half-hour comedy. Don't know how much I can say about it, but anyway, I'm working on that. That's mainly what I do for work right now is write comedies.
Yeah, and you've worked for here's the wife coming in. He's worked on Mad TV, Scrubs, and Happy Endings as a writer and producer as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So you know and have met what's his name on Mad TV? My brain just went blank. I love
Jim Carrey.
He and or Peele or Michael McDonald.
No, the other guy was there toward the end. Did a great Kenny Rogers.
Are you talking about Will Sasso?
Will Sasso. I love Will Sasso.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah, he's awesome.
He's cool.
Will wasn't on my seasons, but he came and did hosting and stuff like that.
I'm such a huge fan. I forgot his name. That's how that works.
He's very funny and one of the nicer dudes you'll ever meet. He's really funny on Twitter too.
Yeah, I've heard that. And he's he used to have some really great vines and stuff like that. He's got great social media. He's super funny with his mom. Like, he just seems like the nicest Canadian comedian in the history of Canada.
He is. He's absolutely all he appears to be.
Yeah. There you go then. All right. Well, we're going to, before we take the pop quiz, going to talk real quick about today's sponsor, which is CrateJoy. It's our own thing, guys. We're sponsoring ourselves. Frogpants.cratejoy.com is where you go and check it out. It's like Lootbox or any of those other kinds of things, except it's specific to Current Geek. So you get stuff from us. I create a bunch of artwork. Tom does a bunch of writing. There's stickers. There's pins. There's USB chargers we sent out recently. We had shot glasses once. Calendars, all kinds of stuff. You never know what coming every month. All you got to do go check it out, frogpants.cratejoy.com, and see if it's for you. I think it might be, and it's a great way to support the show, and we really appreciate it when you do. All right, let's dive in. Oh, I moved my soundboard around. Here we go. Let's do this right here.
America scores and wins.
All right. We could use some America scoring and winning. Let's do that now with our fine guests. Here's what we do. This is a pop quiz. We ask you guys questions in areas of particular expertise. You answer them to the best of your ability. When you get an answer right, you'll hear this. When you get one wrong, you'll hear this. Tom will keep score the whole time. He'll compare them at the end, and we'll see how you do. We're going to start with Audrey. Audrey, are you ready for your questions?
Yes, and I'm very, very nervous because I don't know what my area of expertise is.
Well, according to Hammond Chamberlain, who booked you guys, your area is Farscape trivia.
Oh my God.
Yeah, oh, my goodness.
You like Farscape, right?
You're good.
I do, but I haven't watched it in a while, but I love that show. All right. I love it. So
lots
much.
Of Muppets is my recollection of Farscape. And I liked Farscape a lot, but lots of good Muppets. Oh, I agree. Here's your first question. There are only five, so this is pretty easy. Who played John Crichton in the Farscape series?
Ben Browder.
That is correct. Well done.
And a half point speed bonus there.
Yeah, no kidding. I should have mentioned Tom has funny scoring techniques. He has a whole rule book, so you may get extra points for stuff, lose them in case it's weird cases. Just warning you. It's all good.
Guys, it's like we're in Kokomo.
Yeah, exactly.
What used to do before pinball became legal.
What is the name of the premiere episode of Farscape?
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Peacekeepers.
I don't Did Brian, did you say Peacekeeper?
I did.
No, but I can explain to you everything that happens. He's working for IASA, which is IASA instead of NASA. And he's working on this new wormhole thing. And he's got this weird with his dad because they've got this weird father-son relationship. And he goes up because he wants to prove this slingshot theory. And then a wormhole appears as he's proving his slingshot theory. And he's thrown into the middle of this war between the Peacekeepers and Moya, the spaceship. It's a prisoner ship, and they're escaping, and there the adventure begins.
You're right, but the answer is wrong. The correct
answer. You still get 9/10 of a point for showing your work.
What was it?
It is through the eye of the needle, which probably refers to the wormhole, said wormhole.
Yeah, I wouldn't remember that.
Who is the credited creator of Farscape?
Is Rockne S. O'Bannon.
You are... correct. Nicely done.
10th of a point extra for the middle initial.
No, and that basically gave you a full point for the last one you got wrong. Nicely done. Second to last question. What was the name of the miniseries that followed Farscape?
The Peacekeeper Wars?
You are correct.
Wow.
Nailing it. It's another speed bonus, Tom. She's fast.
Nerd.
She's like a six-shooter Western hero person. I can't think of what I was trying to say. All right, final
She's
question.
One of the 9 people left who love Farscape. You've struck gold. Farscape gold.
Here. All right, good.
No question.
Final question. How many seasons were there of Farscape?
Oh, crap.
Doesn't count the miniseries.
It does not count Peacekeeper Wars. Yeah. There were 4 seasons.
You are correct.
Oh!
A banner day for you. We've never heard this many dings in a while, so this is amazing.
I'm shocked at myself. I usually freeze up in trivia.
Get ready for buzzers. That's all I got to say. I don't even know what they're asking.
Let's throw it over to you.
Our question writer didn't get as deep into things as he sometimes can get either. I'm not trying to take anything away, but like he can be evil.
I think he did well.
He can be very evil.
So I think he walked the line very well this time.
He told me off the air, and I hope he's okay with me saying this, but he told me you guys are two of the favorite people he's ever had to contact.
Oh,
so I feel like there's a little bit of something there where he's just trying to be soft.
We like him very much.
Well, 9 questions and a lie is what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So, Brian, yours is Gandalf trivia.
Oh, hilarious.
So he thinks you're a big Gandalf fan. So here you go.
I am.
All right, good. First question, who played Gandalf in the original Hobbit animated film? This would have been the old, what was that guy's name? They used to do those
movies. This is who played Gandalf? Wow. I don't know.
That's more like it, Iceworm.
Yeah. This is a hard one. It's John Huston is the answer.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's amazing.
Which surprised me to hear that. I had no idea. Right. I guess he was done making Westerns or whatever.
He's an actor.
He did acting.
He was.
Angelica's dad, right?
I understand.
Yeah. Angelica Houston's still with us, right? She's still around.
She's still with us. And so Danny, is her hair.
Yeah, hair's there.
Danny Houston?
Yeah, Danny Houston. I just watched I watched the original Addams Family the other day, speaking of great pinball machines. But anyway, the movie it was based on was really good and held up. I was really surprised by how well the first Addams Family holds up. So just a little tip for people. What is the name of Gandalf's sword?
Name of his sword is shoot.
Incorrect. No, is that your answer?
No. Give me one hot moment.
All right. You're good.
This is dead air. I don't know, so I'm just gonna call it Louise.
Louise. Is it Louise? Incorrect. No. It is Glamring.
Glamring.
Yeah.
But half point because Louise is the little known name of his dagger.
His dagger.
Is that the one that can see
that name? He only
brass knuckles are Tony.
Yeah, there you go, right. Tony. Yes. Tony the brass knuckles. Mm-hmm. That's perfect. All right, what actor voiced Gandalf in the animated version of the Fellowship of the Ring?
Oh my God, Hammond.
As opposed to not the Hobbit.
Oh no, this is Iceworm who writes.
Yeah,
that.
Hammond
who picks the
category. Hammond picks the category. Iceworm does the questions.
Both of them is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So this is another animated. I admit, I'm a fan of the books.
Yeah.
And I love the films, and I played Gandalf in a musical parody of the Fellowship of the Ring called Fellowship!
And Galadriel.
I played Galadriel. Did you arrive precisely when you meant to, or had that? No,
I did. Right when I needed to sing.
All right.
I showed right up.
Perfect.
But I don't know. I'm not sure. No, I'm gonna. I don't know who that is. I'm so sorry.
No, it's all right. It's just surprisingly low stakes for this contest, by the way.
Yes.
The answer.
Half point, You get a point for correctly answering that you did not know who that was.
Thank you.
You also get a tenth of a point for your brave performance as Galadriel.
Yeah, I agree.
You have no idea. You have no idea. That sure was a very hard quick change.
You can now retreat into the West or whatever she says. William Squire is the answer, and I don't know who he is either.
Just made up. That's just the name from the federal witness relocation.
William Squire?
You're going to be William Squire. You're going to live in Kokomo. Now, yep. Heads up.
Yep. Look out, William
there's
Squire.
There's no pinball here.
Yeah.
Also, no drug peddling.
None of that is here. Got a weird governor, though.
That was all the weird thing about Kokomo. Drugs are legal for years.
Unbelievable amount of drugs in Kokomo. Yeah. You couldn't do anything. There's no pinball once you're high.
Yeah, no kidding. Gandalf, what is your second to last question? Gandalf was given one of the rings made for the elves. What ring was he given? We will accept either the name of the ring or the sort of description of what the ring is.
Well, there's... So how many were given to the rings of men? So
9 rings were given to the rings of men.
There's 9 all together, and then
But 9 rings total. The elves were given.
Oh right.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I didn't know they all had names either. That's I don't even know that that's in the books. That I'm sure.
Can't you just call it the One Ring? It's the One Ring.
It's the he wasn't. Oh, you're saying he was given the One Ring?
No, he was given one of the rings for the elves.
Oh. Then that
this
ring
is the is, one of the rings.
That ring is it's called Doodlesmith.
Doodlesmith. Let's find out if that's right. It is incorrect. It is the Ring of Fire.
That's bullshit. I have to say, look it up. Look it up.
It's either it's Ring of Fire or
look it up.
It's Narya.
We're gonna give you a provisional half point for that.
Or Narya. Okay. Narya, the Ring of Narya, the Ring of Fire. Yeah, Narya. Narya. And you can only get through a closet.
She also runs the pinball parlor in Kokomo.
Tolkien loved just naming things. Like he just, and this cup here was the cup of the cup of shades.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's here's the fork of knowing.
It carried on through video games forever. Like all video games, fantasy games do this now. They name stuff the stupidest things.
God, right. I did terrible on my Gandalf stuff.
It's all right. You got one more, and it's the final one. As we all know, Ian McKellen played Gandalf in the live-action films by Peter Jackson. Who was the part offered to first and turned down?
Hmm. Well, I guess I wonder if it was offered either to Patrick Stewart or to Chris. Yes.
You got it, Patrick Stewart. I'm giving it to you early. You got it. You nailed it. According to an article on whatculture.com anyway, I don't know if this has been verified independently by Patrick Stewart, but those two are buddies, so they could probably say one way or the other.
Absolutely.
That's fascinating.
They're appearing right now. They're appearing together on stage in the West End.
Yeah.
In a Pinter play. I guess it's going to be
I thought that was done already.
No, I think it's happening now, and then they have that, that cinematic thing where they show it in a movie theater.
You know what answer you would have gotten right, honey? Is
what?
If they asked you what Gandalf's horse's name was.
Shadowfax.
I know that you would have gotten that one right.
Tom, do you want to
Shadowfax by Xerox.
You want to give anything extra?
It would invert the colors of your facts.
Yeah, I would say so.
What a terrible technology.
All right, so Tom. So
Tom never caught on.
The best part of this, though, is Tom now gets to tell you who won. I feel like I know who did, but I will let you
do
it.
Well, through sheer force of will and gumption, Brian earned 3.1 points, but Audrey finished with 5.5 out of 5.
5.5 out of 5. Okay. Nicely done. Well done, everybody.
Wow.
It's a lot of fun to play that game. We're going to finish things out today with an email. We get these from our listeners. They send them in to currentgeek@gmail.com, and they also can leave us voicemails if they'd like at 801-471-0462. This is from a fan named Geraldine Williams, forever a fan, it says. Guys, I just saw Rogue One and went back and watched a bunch of the trailers and promo videos they showed ahead of release. So much has changed. In fact, virtually nothing shown in trailers was spoken in the actual movie, and there are lots of other weird things. Did you guys notice this? Says Geraldine. So I, oddly enough, found an article today on slashfilm.com, brand new one, where they went kind of frame by frame of every trailer or promo released and found all the stuff that is not in the film. And some of it even includes Alan Tudyk in the background in a mocap suit, fleeing on the beach in a scene that I'm about to spoil something, but he shouldn't be there. Let me put it that way. And there's a bunch of other stuff. Like she has a bunch of lines that she says. There's a line where she says this is a rebellion, and I'm a rebel or whatever.
Yeah, she doesn't say that.
It's not in the movie.
You know what else is that
in rebel.
There?
Mm,
what my else? Favorite line of all the trailers. Can I say what my favorite line of all the trailers? It doesn't give anything
no,
away.
No, it's totally fine.
Okay, it's a Krennic when he says, he's like, the power. And he doesn't say power, he says power. Measurable. And I was waiting for that line the whole time because I just wanted him to go power. And it wasn't in there.
It wasn't there, yeah. It's really weird. Yeah, there's other scenes where, and again, I won't give anything away, but she's running at a time in the movie on the beach, which is in all the promos, carrying something, or it's either on her belt or she's carrying it, that she would not have then yet. And that never happens in the movie where she has this thing that I'm talking about that you guys all know.
Yeah, this always happens, I think. You know, it's common to see trailer moments that don't end up in the film, but this was an extraordinary amount.
Yeah.
Like, I know this film was heavily re-edited. There's reshoots and, mm-hmm. and you know, but it's interesting. I thought it had been re-edited or reshot or both because Disney thought it was too dark.
Mm.
But it didn't seem like that was an issue. I mean, you know, it's funny. I'm not giving anything away, but this, I think everybody knows that Rogue One takes a darker tact than
your average
Star Wars.
Do you guys remember when Suicide Squad came out? That guy in England tried to sue the studio because of all the stuff that was in the trailer, but not in the movie.
Oh yeah. No, I don't remember the lawsuit.
That's... Oh yeah, he said that he took a 2-day trip to London. I don't know why he went from Scotland to London to see.
I can tell you right now, it wasn't to see his girlfriend. But anyway, yeah.
And he wanted his money back because the trailers promised more Joker, and he tried to get his money back at the theater, and he was basically laughed out of the theater. So he was suing for humiliation as well.
Oh my gosh, really? That's crazy. Yeah. Some people, I don't know what to say to them. That's insane to me. But yeah, it's just a strange thing because at some point you could say, well, that was advertising, and I suppose you could say it was falsely advertised.
Is there an implied promise? I mean, there was the scene with Maz Kanata in Force Awakens trailer where she's handing the lightsaber up to what we think is probably Princess Leia or General Leia, which never makes it into the movie, but then we do get it in the deleted scenes later. Mm-hmm. So maybe they could solve the case of Suicide Squad by providing him a DVD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. Here's your DVD.
Well,
have
I don't
the deleted
know
scenes you were looking for.
Yeah.
The problem might be with these big tentpole films is that, you know, the numbers of trailers and teasers that come out now, you know, they'll start them very, very soon, even when things are really, I'm sure, even before principal photography is done sometimes, because they're trying to build kind of excitement a year ahead of time.
Yeah, yeah.
And or more. And, you know, it used to be, you know, very often when you get in, even in TV, you get in and you see what you shot, you go, we're going to have to kind of make a different episode here.
Yeah.
You know,
I imagine that happens a lot. Like, it seems like that's more the norm than not, because no one ever shoots your first takes are never the right takes, and very rarely. And then when you get it all into the editing room, I mean, how many times has it just gone perfectly for anybody? I can't imagine.
Yeah, and then
that.
There's so many levels of notes that, you know, you release a trailer, you know, in spring, and then some, you know, group of marketing people take a look at it or focus test parts of the film or even the trailer, and they go, we don't like that part.
Yeah. And so, well, that, you know, I rebel line, I didn't have a problem with it, but so many people I know were like, oh, I hated that line, and they took it out.
They focus test all this shit like to the nth degree, too much. So I think that's kind of, I mean, and in the case of you know, Suicide Squad, I think, you know, this was, it's meant to be a Joker movie, really.
Yeah,
you know, like a heavy Joker thing. They cast a, you know, this Jared Leto, and I think they thought, oh, he's an Oscar winner. Did you see him when he was in the Dallas Buyers Club, you know? Mm-hmm. And then they put him in there, and not for nothing, but I think they're like, oh, brother, maybe less Joker. What about this girl in the skirt? Yeah. Can we make it about her?
Yeah, can we?
And also make three more movies with her instead?
Yeah, these spinoffs. Yeah. No, I think you're probably right. Geez, Tom, if we only knew one of the co-writers of Rogue One, maybe we could interview him. But we do know him. We should get Gary Witter in
not
here.
Not writer, but story.
Story. Yeah, we should get him in here. I'll bet he has some background on all that. And I'll also bet he's NDA'd to death and can never talk
about
it.
Yeah, I was going to say, he can't tell us any of it.
Yeah. He probably can't say a word. Well, anyway. This has all been fantastic. You guys were some of my favorite guests ever. Thank you so much for being
on. Thank you. This was a blast.
Yeah, that was great. Where can people find you, like on Twitter and stuff? Like somewhere they can contact you or interact or any of that. Is there a place to do that for your shows and whatnot? Tell the people where to go.
First of all, I want to say it was a blast because I won the pop quiz. But you can find me on Twitter at Audrey Kearns, K-E-A-R-N-S, the same for Instagram. Please, please, please check out geekgirlauthority.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram and Tumblr. And we are always looking for contributors to geekgirlauthority.com. So if you want to contribute and do some writing for us, that is fantastic. Also, Booze and Phasers. Please check out Booze and Phasers. You can find it on iTunes and Stitcher and on geekgirlauthority.com as well, at Booze and Phasers on Twitter and at geekgirlauth on Twitter for Geek Girl Authority. That's where you can find me.
Nice. Brian, where should we be looking you up socially?
Well, why don't you just try to find me at Twitter at Brian D. Bradley. And then I'm also on Instagram sometimes at Captain TBD. I think Twitter's probably the happiest place to find me. And then, you know, look, I'll be writing television, so you'll see some of that.
Yeah, we'll see your name. We'll see your name in the credits. And also, anybody who says Twitter is the happiest place to find me is such an oxymoron, but I love it. I love it. Twitter's the happiest place on earth, everybody.
I just like jokes.
You know, also, you should check out on iTunes, check out Five Truths and a Lie, that storytelling show, because you'll find a lot of, we take it to cons sometimes, like Dragon Con and stuff like that, and you'll find a lot of nerd celebrities telling stories and stuff, and those are some of our best shows, is the ones that we do at cons. Oh, so I just want to throw that one in there.
Yeah,
they're
for
really fun.
For sure. We got a lot of listeners who go to cons like Dragon Con and would love to know that and find that. Well, excellent. And also watch for some mystery project on NBC that we can't talk about. I'm looking forward to whatever that is.
When you see the really good one, that's it.
That's the
that's
one.
It.
Yeah,
that's
indeed. It. Tom Merritt, anything from you, sir, before we go?
Yeah, just quickly want to remind people that Ron Richards and I have started off a Twin Peaks Rewatch Con podcast in advance of the return to Showtime. You can check that out at damnfinepodcast.com.
I love that it's Damn Fine Podcast, but it's about Twin Peaks. And it's
about a damn fine cup of coffee.
It's a damn fine cup of coffee. I really wished it was wrapped in plastic, but I can't get what
also
I want.
Also opens us up to do other things with it, I guess, someday. I hadn't really thought about that.
That's a good point. Yeah, think of that. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Chat room, you guys are great, as always. Again, thanks to our guests, and thanks, everyone, who follows up and listens to the show later. If you don't know where to do that, go to currentgeek.com. currentgeek.reddit.com is our Reddit page. You can submit stories. You can vote them or upvote them and tell us what we should be reading on the show. currentgeek@gmail.com is our email address. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review another dispute over a Kickstarter takedown, but this time with a twist. This takedown led to a lawsuit against Cards Against Humanity, a favorite in the tabletop gaming and casual gaming community. Another game developer, called SCS Direct, launched a Kickstarter in early 2016 for a party game called Humanity Hates Trump. The project quickly earned nearly $10,000, thanks to the hot political topic and the compatibility with CAH and its clones. However, the project was taken down when Kickstarter and SCS received a cease and desist letter from CAH. CAH claims that it owns trademark and or trade dress protection in the use of black and white on fill-in-the-blank card games, and that there would be consumer confusion that SCS's game comes from the makers of CAH. SCS has sued CAH to get an injunction against further claims of infringement, and to sue for their business losses and damages caused by the Kickstarter takedown. It's a classic case of threaten suit and get sued yourself in a declaratory judgment action. SCS notes in the complaint that CAH owns no trademark office registrations on these features of their game, and also that CAH has allowed plenty of other competitors in the marketplace to exist with black and white cards. These include other card games like Crabs Adjust Humidity, Cats Abiding Horribly, Guards Against Insanity, and Super Fight, among others. In view of this dilution in the market and the failure to police the alleged trade dress before now, SCS appears to make a strong case that this claim of trade dress coverage of black and white cards is baseless. It's possible that CAH would still try to argue a trademark claim based on the use of the word humanity in the title. That is not rebutted by the SCS complaint, and it may be an easier case to win for CAH, even with just one word of overlap in the game titles. Indeed, that fact may kill SCS's chance to get an injunction for a so-called baseless claim. CAH may not have a winning claim, but that doesn't mean the claims are baseless. Ironically, CAH came out with their own Trump and Hillary-themed expansion packs later in 2016 to raise money to support their chosen candidate, and those expansions raised over $530,000. Perhaps just drowning SCS with competition and their own strong fan base would have been a better option than fighting over a $10,000 Kickstarter campaign. The bottom line is, enforcing your IP rights is important, especially in trademark law. But companies like CAH have to be careful, as such enforcement can lead to these kind of counter-lawsuits. Don't just send cease and desist or takedown letters without knowing the risks and planning for them. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.